OneTrust Business Lunch. There's Elise Glink. Happy Halloween Eve, Elise.
Well, thanks very much, John.
You're the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. I want to talk to you a little bit about why the Chicago area is such a hot zip code. But before we do that, talk about hot Halloween sales. How are Americans spending their money this year?
Well, we are spending a whole lot getting all dressed up and decorating our houses. I will say that I put out my decorations last night, and I spent about $15 buying one of the biggest bags of candy I've ever seen from Costco. But most people are spending a lot more than I. They're spending over $4 billion on costumes, almost $4 billion on decorations, $3.6 billion on candy. And then $700 million on pet costumes.
I will say this.
Our friend's dog's going to be a martini. I don't know about yours.
Wait, somebody's dog is going to be a martini?
A martini. They have a martini costume. I haven't seen it yet, but it's a martini costume.
I could see a dog being a hot dog like a wiener dog. I don't know how a dog gets dressed up as a martini because... They're horizontal animals, mostly. It would seem to me like the martini would be spilling in that case.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder if there's like a large, you know, chocolate martini glass perched on top of their back or something. Or maybe it's an entire setup for mixing your own martinis.
Is it a chocolate lab? Is that it? No?
Actually, this one is not, but that would be a very clever idea. But, you know, the other thing is the number of people who are participating in Halloween. So this year, the estimated share of Americans that are taking part in the celebration, 73%. That's a new record high. I think people are just looking for a way to just get their minds out of all this stuff that's going on in the world. There's so much of it, and into something more fun, like, say, an adult witch costume.
I saw that 93% of people are more afraid of home repairs than ghosts, which it makes sense to me. I've noticed, and we've talked a little bit about this on the show, that I think where the money is being spent is on yard decorations for Halloween. Those big skeletons and the black garland and the lights, ghosts hanging from trees. People are doing up their yards the way they used to at Christmas.
That's right. They are. And actually, there's some new light decorations that are multi-purpose, or I should say multi-holiday. So they can be orange and purple and black for Halloween. You just sort of choose the color selections. And then you get into Christmas and they can turn red and green. And if you celebrate Hanukkah, blue and white. I think that's kind of a clever thing. And I'm seeing more kinds of multi-use, keep them up all winter kinds of decorations, which... Honestly, I'm sure anybody who's put up those kinds of holiday decorations and then taking them down be very happy to just have the all-in-one. But as you drive through, it's as if everybody wants to, I don't know, offer a better display than their neighbors or maybe contribute in some way to the celebration of the holiday in the neighborhood.
You notice Spider-Man's the number one costume for kids and far and away. You mentioned witches for adults. That the cost of Target's 8-foot jack-o'-lantern named Lewis went viral on social media. I guess I'm not on social media enough. I don't know what that is, but that's expensive too.
Yeah, that was $180. There's some really interesting decorations on the North Shore. If you drive around at night, this is just amazing what people are putting up. You know, different kinds of spotlights against their houses or these enormous spiders that are literally as big as your first and second floor attached to the house. There are people who are now making very good livings, putting up Christmas decorations and holiday decorations. They're moving on to Halloween and, of course, Valentine's Day. Get to the 4th of July, and we're almost at a year-round thing where somebody, you can just hire somebody to bring out all kinds of decorations and stage the exterior part of your house much the way you would stage the interior if you were getting ready to sell.
Interesting. I love those giant skeletons that are climbing up and around yards and houses. For Thanksgiving, we don't seem to do that much on the outside. Maybe somebody should come up with like a giant turkey sitting on the roof of your house, you know, like escaping, if you will, or climbing out the window, something like that.
I love that.
Well, just think about that. If somebody thinks, hey, I can make money on that, that will happen. By the way, our engineer Bob showed me a picture just now, Elise, of how a dog costume looks like a martini. The dog, you know, when the dog wears the cone of shame, that plastic little shell around its head to keep it from, in my dog's case, pulling stitches out. So you put that plastic cone around them. And then you have just like olive decorations on a toothpick decoration kind of sticking behind his head. So, and then if he's just sitting there, put a shaker at his feet, and you've got a dog martini costume. Very nice.
I will take a picture of the one that I see tomorrow night, because I'm pretty sure I'm going to see it, and I will send it to you.
Before we ask you about construction and real estate, talk to me about the UAW strike. What do you know about that?
Yeah, so we've been hearing that everything is starting to settle, which is great news. Local United Auto Workers, the union leaders approved a tentative settlement with Ford. That was last night. That includes $8.1 billion in new plant investments by the company, $5,000 ratification bonuses. It's a 4.5-year agreement. It'll be rolled out for approval. But there's also one in the works between the UAW and General Motors that's kind of similar to what's going on with the one at Ford. Now, the hotline, sort of the headlines of these are a 25% wage increase over the period of time of the deal. Raises and benefits boost the salary top wage to about $40 an hour, which translates into about $80,000 a year, by the way. And there's a big increase for starting wages, 68% up to about $28 an hour. The union said that's for both the Ford and the Stellantis deal. And then they also reinstated cost of living adjustments. This reduces the 8-year path to top wages to 3 years, so from 8 years to 3 years. And it allows the right to strike over plant closures. And there's some other benefits as well. And what's really nice about this, I mean, the auto companies have just lost millions and millions of dollars with this strike, you know, as have the workers. And it's nice to see people coming together and being able to move forward.
Talk about apartment construction in the Chicago area.
Yeah, it's nice to be at the top of a list for a really good reason when it comes to real estate for a change. Turns out that apartmentlist.com has been looking at how much building is going on. And Chicago, the metro area, is one of the top in the entire nation for the number of units, rental units, that have been built in the last 5 years. 60607 is actually the very, very top. It has built more apartments in that zip code than the entire city of Milwaukee. We've doubled that supply in just 5 years.
Do you know where that is, 07? Where is that in Chicago?
I think it's in the near south side, is my guess.
Yeah, Pete's kind of nodding his head, too. Sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, and 60, so that's the 13th busiest apartment construction in the country, is that zip code. 60605, I don't know where that one is. That is comes right up after that, almost 3,500 units built there. 60654 had 2,900 units. 60610, which I know where that is in the neighborhood of the Gold Coast. That one has had 2,800 units built. And 60614, I think that is like Lincoln Park.
And this is over a five-year span, right?
Over a five-year span, that one had almost 1,500 units built. And when you compare to some of the other places, the other hot spots in the country, I mean, we're really doing pretty well. And that, of course, is great, right? Because that means, you know, you've got bigger numbers of people moving here. You've got, you know, investments being made in the city of Chicago, which is terrific. It's nice to see.
Sounds like that's still below demand, though, because rents are still high in Chicago, right?
Oh, yeah. There's no question about it. I mean, we are certainly, you know, looking for more development. And we all, just overall in the country, we need more houses built. We need more homes built, apartments, whether they're apartments, townhouses, or single-family houses. We just need more. We've got more people in this country. And since the pandemic, people want to move out. Don't know why my kids don't want to live at home anymore, but they don't. Nobody else's do either. Everybody's ready for their own places. And so around the country, we're trying to get more built. And if you look at the numbers of jobs, We're certainly seeing a lot of construction jobs added. This is, again, you know, one of the reasons why the economy is going so strong right now. John, I mean, we had very strong numbers last week.
I wonder if 8% interest on a 30-year loan is one of the reasons that whatever rents are, they're attractive. I mean, I'll bet a lot of people are renting today who are just waiting to be able to afford a mortgage.
The, well, I think 20% that's right.
Down. I know David Hochberg will get you a 1% or a 10%. But, you know, once upon a time, you wanted to have 20% going in. And at 8% for the balance, that's tough for people.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who are just not getting approved. And if you look at the numbers of, you know, people, there are a lot of homes, not a lot. A lot is relative, right? But there are more homes going up on the market than there have been in a while. And they're selling immediately. And I think a very large percentage of those are cash deals. And so when you have a cash deal, mortgages aren't involved. It doesn't matter if it's 8% or 18% to pay on that mortgage. You don't have to pay it. And I think we're seeing those deals that are going to continue. But that really X's out the first-time buyers who don't generally have that kind of cash to be able to buy a home. But we're hoping that if interest rates don't go up, which everybody's a little bit worried about what the Fed might do based on the economy strength at the moment, we're hoping that, you know, prices will maybe come down a little bit or at least stay where they are so that first-time buyers have more of a shot at getting into these houses.
Yeah, but don't you guess that even if the Fed says, okay, we'll leave it, my guess is, what do I know? It just sounds like they're not going to raise it this time, but they might yet raise it again. We'll see how it goes. But even if they pause, it's not like suddenly you're going to get mortgage rates down to 5% or 4%.
That is correct. We're not going to go back down to 5 or 4% anytime soon. I have to say, though, when I saw that the economy was running at over a 4.5% average annual rate, that was really astonishing to me. I mean, I know we've had a strong economy. I've told you for years now that, you know, my personal feeling is as long as we've got a really strong jobs market, it would be really hard to see us fall into any deep sort of recession. And certainly that seems to be holding up. Jobs are holding up, and we are certainly powering through better than any of the other first world nations around this world. So we'll just have to see what happens. Interest rates, though, to your point, will stay high if that's the case, because the Fed is determined to bring down inflation.
By golly, as long as the economy is going well, the Fed is going to make sure that people suffer eventually. That's their pledge. It's 1227, and that's Elise Glink, the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. Click on thinkglink.com. Elise, we'll talk again.
Sounds good, John.
Jim Dahlke joins us, national editor at American Inno. ChicagoInno.com is a good website for Jim and his colleagues' stuff. Hi, Jim. Welcome back. How are you?
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
You always keep a good track of all things tech. Before we talk about the biotech summit or the tech summit, talk to me about Flashpoint Therapeutics. Who are they? What do they do?
Yeah, this is a biotech startup here in Chicago. It's a spin-out, actually, from Northwestern University. Flashpoint Therapeutics is developing therapeutics for cancer and other diseases. So they're really taking an interesting approach here. Just raised $10 million in new funding, and they say that their immunotherapies have shown promise for treating breast cancer, lipoma, cervical cancer, melanoma, and other forms of cancer. Interesting new startup here in Chicago. This is from a founder who was formerly the associate dean of precision medicine at Mount Sinai, and actually he lost the mother to cancer when he was young. So certainly a mission that is personal to him and looking to kind of bring better cancer care to others across the country. And so Flashpoint Therapeutics here with $10 million in the bank is going to hopefully be able to use that funding to keep growing.
Immunotherapy, is that, do you know much about that? Is that my body like developing some sort of immunity to some kind of cancer?
Yeah, I can't say I'm an immunotherapy expert necessarily, but the startup says its initial therapeutic candidate has been shown to yield 80 times stronger immune activation and 650% greater tumor killing. So they really believe that they're onto something here, and some of their early data is showing that. Time will tell if this latest fundraise is going to give them the kind of boost they need to keep going and kind of continue to turn what was, you know, a university therapeutic into, you know, a commercial grade business.
Right. And are you saying the funds are coming from Chicago, or the company that's developing this is in Chicago?
Yeah, so the company is in Chicago, based at a Northwestern university. The fund was raised by the fundraising was from led by Beta Lab, which is a deep tech VC firm actually headquartered in Saudi Arabia. This is a technology originally developed out of Northwestern University.
What about this Capital Summit next week? Talk about that.
Yeah, speaking of biotech, happening this Thursday is the Chicago BioCapital Summit. And really what this aims to do is to kind of shine a light on Chicago's biotech scene. There's been a lot of momentum on creating Chicago as kind of this hub for health tech and biotech. Of course, the Chan Zuckerberg BioHub was announced recently in Chicago, really kind of a big win for the city's biotech scene. There's a lot of folks kind of championing the space here locally. But really, Chicago is not considered a top 10 city in the U.S. for biotech. That was from a recent report by real estate firm JLL. There just hasn't been as much momentum here as there have been in some other cities, certainly the Valley, Boston, even cities like Philadelphia. But people here in Chicago are looking to change that, and the Chicago BioCapital Summit is really intended to kind of bring investors and startups together in one place, kind of highlight what's going on, kind of take the technology that might be sort of happening quietly at the university level, bring it out sort of into the public and get it in front of investors and really commercialize this technology and really continue to boost biotech in Chicago. So, if the Chan Zuckerberg initiative is a step in the right direction, folks are hoping that this BioCapital Summit is just another step in the right direction, right, to get more eyeballs and more momentum in the biotech scene here in Chicago.
What's PawCare?
Yeah, PawCare. This is a new interesting platform launched first here in Chicago. This is all about pet care booking, so grooming. So if you need to get your furry friend a grooming appointment, you can do this via the PawCare platform. What's interesting about this business is it's led by a couple of tech veterans. So one former director of product at Groupon, and then actually the co-founder and CTO of restaurant booking app Resy, which you've probably seen if you've ever made a restaurant reservation online. Resy powers lots of those across the U.S. And so the founder of that is now helping you make an easier appointment to book a grooming for your pets. And so, Chicago is the first location for this business. They're based here. What's interesting is we see actually quite a few consumer businesses either, you know, launch first here in Chicago or make Chicago kind of the next launch after Silicon Valley, for example. Lots of founders have told us in the past that Chicago is just a good market to kind of get a sense for what does, you know, the greater country want. Not necessarily everyone living in the Bay Area is going to be indicative of the type of consumer that you're going to get over the broad U.S. And Chicago is a pretty good sample of what you might be getting consumer-wise over the rest of the country. So PawCare live here in Chicago, really helping you kind of get one click to get your pet grooming taken care of. And they say boarding is next, so boarding is going to be the next piece.
Yeah, you read my mind. Like, I guess we need our dog's nails clipped and stuff like that sometimes. But what I really like is either somebody to come to my house and watch my dog or me to take my dog someplace that I like that I could click through. If they've got an app or a website, a portal of some sort for that, no, I'm really interested in that.
Absolutely. And then being able to price compare as well is certainly a big deal. I mean, there's a few apps that do some sort of stuff like this. Wag does a lot of dog walking, for example, and has some boarding capabilities as well. Yeah. So this is not the first entrance into this space, but we'll be curious to see if they can kind of gain traction here locally and expand. But certainly they've got a very talented founding team who's got a track record of building promising businesses. So we'll have to wait and see.
And this is Chicago's the test market for that? I mean, it's the first location for the use of this app?
That's right, yeah. So they've got about 2,000 users so far and about 35 local providers. They're hoping to get, by the end of the year, up to 200 providers on the app. So they're in the Cook County area right now. They hope to kind of expand to the suburbs into areas like Elgin and Naperville over the next 18 months. And so it sounds like they're kind of trying to nail the Chicago market first before they expand outside of the city.
And that's PawCare. You mentioned that the former director of products at Groupon is one of the principals in this company. Is Groupon still a thing? That used to be all the rage We don't talk about Groupon so much anymore. Is that still out there and going and serving businesses?
You know, it's still out there. It's still going. It's still serving businesses. It is not the company that it was 5, 10 years ago. Remember, this was a business at the time that, you know, really put Chicago startup scene on the map. You know, Andrew Mason, Eric Lukofsky, Brad Keewell, all those guys who are kind of very well-known tech folks now got this business off the ground. And, you know, they very famously turned down a very large acquisition offer from Google, went public on their own, and the stock price has really plummeted ever since. It was a business that was born of the recession, right? It was kind of born of that, you know, that 2008 timeframe where people were really looking to save a buck, and it really yeah. struck at the right time, struck a chord, and has you know, struggled ever since. They've gone through several rounds of large layoffs over the last couple of years. And yeah, I mean, you can still go out and get Groupons today, but in terms of the size of the business and the amount of revenue they're doing, it's really not quite what it was from years ago.
I didn't think about it in those terms, but the reason it was so successful then was the timing. If Groupon had launched today, although maybe we've got a recession coming, but in better financial times, maybe it would not have been the Groupon we knew then, huh?
And there are more online coupon options today, right? So Groupon in some ways kind of pioneered that, you know, really gave you an opportunity to kind of look for those, you know, event type deals, experience type deals. There's a lot of opportunities to do that now today. So there's more competition, certainly. But yeah, they were definitely, you know, benefited by that, the timing of their launch. And yeah, has, you know, sort of plodded along ever since. And yeah, but at the end of the day, you know, lots of people like, you know, this former director who's now leading a new startup, you know, Groupon was the launching point for a lot of Chicago tech careers. People got an opportunity to work at a fast growing startup and then launch something new. We often write about people who have founded new businesses after spending some time at Groupon, especially in the early days. And so it was a launching pad for a lot of tech careers. And those are the types of businesses, whether they're successful or not, they help local tech startup scenes by giving people experience and then giving them an opportunity to do something new.
Hmm. Jim Dahlke, click on ChicagoWinnow.com. Thank you, Jim. Always interesting.
Thanks, John.
More business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Stellantis is preparing to reopen its assembly plant in Belvedere. The company is also committed to opening a new battery plant in Belvedere. The plan will create more than 3,000 jobs, which is double its recent headcount. The state says it'll be an investment of billions of dollars. The announcement coincided with Stellantis reaching a tentative agreement with the United Auto Workers Union. The company idled the plant 8 months ago, putting about 1,200 people out of work. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Thank you. Happy Monday, and let's see who's on the phone.
Hi, Steve. This is Cindy from Hungry Monkey.
Yeah, there's some huge news about the North Suburban Baking Company that Cindy started, but first, please allow me to thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. It's truck season. Put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, back to Hungry Monkey and Cindy Kinsley. What do you do there, Cindy?
Well, I'm founder and chief baking officer.
And like so many startups we profile here on WGN?
It started really by accident.
Cindy loved baking, was told she was good at it, and always wanted to own and run a bakery. But
I had a job. I headed up marketing and advertising at the Chicago Transit Authority for 10 years.
Then opportunity came knocking, heavily disguised.
I lost my job when I was 48 and pregnant.
Well, as the saying does not go, when life gives you a lemon, make banana bread.
Someone asked me to bake for a local charity event for kids with special needs, and my own daughter had some learning disabilities, and I said, sure. And we sold out the first night. We sold out the second night. And I thought, huh.
So at the age of 51, with a toddler in tow, Cindy started baking banana bread in her North Suburban home.
And so I started out in a farmer's market.
Her daughter Lily, now 16 and doing well, was the namesake for Hungry Monkey, a name that appealed to other kids.
They would come running up to our booth at the farmer's market, Hungry Monkey, Hungry Monkey. A lot of kids grew up eating our banana bread for breakfast.
Cindy says she always sold out at the farmer's markets.
And then Sunset Foods asked if we would make our banana bread for them. So we started selling our banana bread and our triple chocolate brownies to Sunset Foods.
And finally, here's the buried lead for this story.
We're now in Jewel, all the Jewel Osco stores, 188 stores.
That is huge, and a huge leap in terms of production.
For the first Jewel run, this is interesting, we used 10,000 pounds of bananas.
Wow. Where do you find 10,000 pounds of bananas in Chicago?
Adam Banana in Chicago.
Well, maybe that's a story for another Business of Food. But congratulations to Cindy Kinsley at Hungry Monkey Bakery.
Thank you so much. I mean, I'm really grateful for all the people that helped us along the way.
On today's calendar, it's National Candy Corn Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Listen to this. Here is Harrison Brooks, the founder and CEO of a game company. He's a Northwestern University student. Harrison, you're on WGN. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here.
We've got a couple of minutes to talk about this fourth down game you've came up with. It's a card game for people that are what, football fans?
Yes. Well, football fans and not football fans can just come together and play this amazing game for everyone.
What's your major at Northwestern?
It's called Manufacturing and Design Engineering.
So maybe this is kind of right in that wheelhouse. You designed this game. Maybe you had something to do with the building of it, the cards, the packaging, that sort of thing?
Yes. I designed the gameplay and the mechanics, and then my friend and classmate did all of the illustrations for the cards, and then we partnered with manufacturers to get it produced.
So the game is available now. I'll ask again, we'll talk about the game and how it's played in a minute, but now is it on Amazon? Is it in stores? How can I get this?
Yes, it's available on Amazon, and I'm hoping to get it into some retailers soon.
It's called Fourth Down. So how does this game work?
So it's a simple but sort of a new type of gameplay where you play in three phases that you move through independently. So you have cards that you put face down on the table, cards that you put face up on the table, and cards in your hand, with the goal of moving through each of those phases and getting rid of those cards as you go through it. And what's special about this game is because of those three phases, first you have the card that only you can look at, and then you have the cards on the face up on the table that everyone can look at, and then you have the cards face down on the table that are sort of like a mystery surprise. And so that adds a lot of interesting texture and surprises into the gameplay.
How does football enter into this game? What's the football angle?
Yeah, so the football is you're sort of like running up the field trying to score a touchdown. So as you're discarding cards, you're putting higher yards on top of lower yards. So you start, 10 yards, then one player could go up to 20 yards, 30 yards, and so on. And then there are these other special cards that add in different twists. So there's fumble, timeout, interception, and then touchdown. And so you can sabotage other players and put yourself ahead in the game. And it really, it's a very fast-paced game, so it almost feels like it's really like the excitement of football in a card game.
Everything, it seems to me, is online these days, or digital video. Is there room for what you have in mind, a tactile analog game, if you will?
I think so. I know from my personal experience that games, like in-person card games and board games, I don't think will ever be replaced by digital games because they allow people to come together in person and have sort of a platform for their socialization with one another. And you really can't replicate that in the same way online because it just doesn't have that same community-centered aspect.
I agree with you on that, and I hope you're right. I mean, maybe another way to imagine it is what's the digital version of this game? But you're doing the paper and cardboard version now, aren't you?
Yes, and I believe in the paper and cardboard version because I think that that's what our society needs more of. A lot of the innovation and entrepreneurship is surrounded more and more around tech, but I think we still need innovation and new products in the low-tech area because that's sort of a neglected space.
This is the second game you've come up with, isn't it?
Yes. So my first game was Elevator Up, and that was sort of the basis for what inspiration that led to fourth down because Elevator Up ended up speaking to the community of elevator enthusiasts and people who love vertical transportation, which surprised me, but that then taught me.
You came up with the game without knowing that there was a built-in audience for it. You just thought we'd all enjoy this novel game of going up and down, discarding cards, and trying to empty your hand. Lo and behold, there was an audience for that. Certainly there's an audience for football, so you don't need to invent the wheel here. I wish you luck. So where can I get it right now, then?
You can get them both on Amazon. If you search Fourth Down Card Game or Elevator Up Card Game on Amazon, they should pop right up. And then also this weekend, I will be exhibiting at the Chicago Toy and Game Fair in Rosemont, where I'll be selling them also.
Harrison Brooks is the founder and CEO, the chief end zone officer at PlayFourthDown.com. PlayFourthDown.com. Nice going, Harrison. Good luck. Let's talk again.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.